I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 13 of the Create More podcast with me, Ben Stewart. On this fortnight's podcast, we have Fred Mills from the B1M. Now, those of you who listened last week will have heard me give him a little shout out at the end of the last episode. And I said that they were trying to reach 1 million views on their YouTube channel. Now, massively undersold it there, I think. And I've been chatting to Fred, and I think really what he's trying to achieve is they want to shift the entire focus from BIM being used in the construction industry, from a small group of experts to mass uptake. They feel, and I think I totally agree, and this is why the podcast is great, and I think you should listen to it, because they feel that it will greatly improve architecture, engineering, and the construction industries. And Fred, and you'll hear this in the podcast, is very passionate about BIM, and what's fantastic is they're trying to engage people in a way that inspires them rather than, you know, just boring documents. I mean, we talk about it in the podcast, but I imagine when a lot of you hear the word BIM,
yawn,
because I love the idea of BIM. And I think for those of you who don't know, it's building information modeling, and it's a kind of, it's not 3D modeling, it's very more ingrained than that. And it does feel that there's a shift happening in the construction industry. I don't think necessarily as much in the architecture industry, as far as I'm aware. I mean, it's a kind of very labor intensive if you've not used it before. And if you just type in BIM on YouTube and go to anything other than, you know, the B1M, you get fairly dry videos. I mean, they're very kind of like, this is how it's efficiently used and blah, blah, blah. But what Fred has been trying to do, what is doing, he's the founding, one of the co-founders of the B1M, is to create an open forum. Like, you just go on there, go on the B1M.com, and on there they have so many really interesting but short, concise, and good videos about BIM. You know, what is BIM? How do I use it? Like, I don't get it. And I genuinely think that even people who think they know what BIM is, it's been banded around the industry for ages, but even if you think you know what it is, I would still recommend going on there, because what's really great is that he's kind of like focusing how people are starting to talk about BIM. And when I said he wants 1 million views, I think, as Fred quite rightly pointed out, he's like, well, that's not our target. We're just saying that was a great, you know, starting point to get people excited. But, and you'll hear from the podcast, it's very ambitious, and that is just his starting point, is to get 1 million views. And as you hear him talk, you realize, you know, there's much larger grand plan. So yeah, go on it. It's really, really good. I mean, he used to work for Osborne, who are a fantastic construction company, and they're now a shareholder in the B1M. So yeah, listen to it, because he's gone from, you know, this being a kind of side project to now him being full time there. Yeah, really inspirational stuff. He's, you know, very similar age to me, and it's really cool to see someone be that passionate about something and then make that their primary job. And you can tell from, you know, listening to him talk that, you know, he's very passionate, and he's definitely found like the right focus for him to do it. So yeah, listen to it. It's brilliant. And at the end, I'll tell you all about who's on episode 3. And in my world at the moment, I'm recording a podcast today all about Kickstarter. And then I've already got a podcast recorded about virtual reality, meeting Johnny Steiner on Wednesday to talk about Open Desk. So yeah, there's loads to come up. So yeah, listen to the podcast and then come back at the end. So enjoy. That's it. Yeah, we're started. Well, I'm actually going to give you a proper introduction this time. This is series two, so I feel like I should up my game a little bit and say I'm here with Fred Mills, and I'm going to call you the founder or co-founder of Beaverman.
Co-founder's probably more diplomatic.
Co-founder, yeah. Okay, co-founder. But yeah, we were going to originally sit down for like series one, and then Sue Butcher put me in touch with you. She's like, if you're interested in BIM, you should definitely talk to Fred.
I listened to that podcast and I heard myself being referred to, and I was like, oh God, yeah, they're talking about me.
So I thought, and then I went on your website and stuff, and it just seemed perfect. I think just a kind of bit of background for the podcast. I think as I've done the first series, I've realized it's kind of in my own way, it's me finding out about other jobs and other professions and stuff. And I love the idea of BIM, and the reason you're here is to explain to me kind of because are adopting BIM quite heavily, but yeah, in so many different directions and so many different pieces of software. And yeah, I actually emailed you saying, which bit of software do you recommend? And you were like, we don't recommend software.
Well, yeah, it would be a bit, we're trying to be as impartial as possible. That's part of our appeal, is our impartiality. You know, I can sort of recommend you something down the pub that I've used in the past, yeah. But to go into writing about something isn't probably something I should do. So.
Well, if we start off with not just BIM, but you run the website B1M.
Yeah, the B1M.com, but we're essentially a YouTube channel. So it's quite a popular business model on YouTube that you have the channel, and it's supported by a website as well. So that's how the business is put together. It's basically a website and a YouTube channel. What we do is we're sharing content on a regular basis. So every Wednesday at 12 noon GMT, we put new video content out about building information modeling. Mm-hmm. And that's quite good because obviously the UK is in the middle of the world. So we sit on the GMT line. So we've got our North American followers get it in their morning news feeds, and our Australian followers get it in their late afternoon, evening news feed. So that's really good.
And you can see all that pop up around the world.
Absolutely. It's really interesting, cool, isn't it? Because we tweet the video at 12 midday, and there's a blog post, and there's a whole piece on the website around it, but we actually have to publish the video about 5:02, and those 5 minutes are really interesting because you see loads of stuff going on already and tweeting and sharing and stuff, which is really cool. So
because I think in no way the same scale, but with the podcast, seeing where people listen to it and they're on the world, it's quite addictive, isn't
it's really interesting. Yeah we've got six continents now, so we've got from Reykjavik down to Cape Town, and from Fiji across to Hawaii.
And you've got because it's called B1M, so you've kind of got a mission statement, haven't you, which is...
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, going back to sort of the basics of it, really, there's a real need to adopt building information modelling in the industry, and I think if we're going to really improve the way construction operates, I think building information modelling is a really good way of doing that, because as soon as you try and adopt BIM, you end up addressing numerous other things that you've... challenges that have faced the industry for years, things like procurement approach, risk transfer, early engagement of contractors, focus on the whole life cost rather than just capital cost. So I think it's a real good vehicle, and someone once called it a Trojan horse for change, which I think is quite a good, good analogy. That was Richard Lane, actually. I should credit him, Richard Lane, of the BIM task group. So for me, it's about realising that change in the industry. And I worked in the industry for... sort of 7 or 8 years before I set this up, and I, having experienced the day to day of it and seen how people could be alienated and disillusioned, I decided to look at ways to improve it. Came across BIM, discovered that actually BIM is a complicated topic and it's being presented in a really, really complicated way. At the moment there's the UK BIM Task Group, and they've done a lot of great work in putting guidance documents together, world-leading guidance documents online, and there's lots of stuff out there. There's lots of events you can go to. There's lots of training courses you can pay for. It's all good stuff, but it just struck me as someone that was, I was interested enough to go and find out about BIM.
Yeah.
And I came up against these barriers where I had to download a PDF and read it in my spare time. I had to go to an event in an evening and piece together from five or six different presentations a bit of a picture.
Yeah.
Talk to several different people and put an idea together to work out what BIM actually was.
Mm. No, I 100% agree. And that's why I like the website so much, because it's done in one of the earliest videos is what is BIM? It's as ground level as that. So if you genuinely don't know anything. But then what I liked is that even inside in our office, we know a few of the other generation are like, well, it's just 3D modeling. We've been doing 3D modeling for ages. And then I'll be honest, I came at it from a point like that. And then you go to a few lectures, but you're right, it is hard.
Yeah.
You're like, well, Just, okay, well, how do I do it?
Yeah. And what I wanted to do was, because we need to get, you know, there's 2 million people in the UK and there's some sort of 750 million people in AEC around the world. We need all those people working this way if we're going to see the true value from it. Yeah. You know, we can't have a few group of experts doing it. So with the B1M, we're trying to get BIM out to the masses. So the B1M, yeah, stands for BIM 1 million. And the idea is to switch the focus from, you know, little cliques of experts saying, oh, we're not going to talk about what BIM is anymore. We've moved on from that. We know what we're doing. We're pushing ahead. Well, that's great, guys. But, you know, the industry's got to come with us. And actually try and reach out to people and help them go from zero to BIM. And like you say, the What is BIM video, you know, some of my best videos are where my mum and dad say to me, oh, Fred, I know what you're on about now. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I get it.
That's the best litmus test. If your wife or parents can understand what the hell you're talking about, then you're like, okay, maybe
Absolutely.
Other people can understand.
Absolutely.
I kind of, again, I was, we were chatting earlier, we were saying it's weird. I've seen you on so many videos now that it's actually Cohen, but...
Not dodgy ones, I hope.
No.
Just been related.
Just been related, the ones I've found
YouTube
so
channel.
Far. And I was... It's just, I guess the step into BIM seems massive.
Yeah.
I know it, like, once you're there, you realise it's not as hard. But I was, I think one of your presentations, one of the guys was saying that upgrading a motorway, this is the high speed 2 video,
yeah.
He's like, upgrading a motorway is actually, there's a negative return because the roadworks and the disruption create more traffic.
Yeah, zero sum game.
Yeah, that's it. And I can totally understand why, for example, if we work on a tool building and we haven't used BIM and then we decide to use it, the very first person or the first project to do that in our office is going to be crushed for like a couple of months. And then those guys see the benefits. But it's like, it's seeing what it was like before, remembering that, and then remembering what it's like post-BIM. I can totally
absolutely.
See there's some advantages.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a case of, I think for organisations, it's a case of having a pilot project and just not being afraid of making mistakes and tripping up, but just having a go at it. Because, and I hope through the videos we put out, you know, you see that, and I should say at this point that our videos, you're not going to watch them and be an expert in BIM. They're a great way of going from zero to BIM, of getting a bit of an understanding of, okay, what the bloody hell are you on about? Okay, I know what you mean now. Mm. And getting a bit of a foot in the door. So we're trying to make it more accessible in that regard.
Yeah. What was your why YouTube channel? Why what was your kind of thinking behind that?
I just wanted something more engaging. I think, as I said, we were expecting people to go out of their way to go and find out about BIM in a bit of a dry way.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to do was reach out to them and put stuff into their social media news feed in a way that grabs their attention, that is minimum effort.
Mm.
You know, you can sit back and watch a video and you're being explained to. It's over a fixed period of time. You know how much you're in for. You can choose the length of video you want to watch on our website. It's just a bit more of an engaging way of reaching people. And I think with YouTube as well, you know, there's something like 4 billion views a day. There's 300 hours of content uploaded every minute. And it's the second biggest social network second biggest search engine after Google itself. So it's where the audience are. It's where people are these days.
Yeah.
It's a really accessible, open platform. So, it just made sense to us, really.
Because I think, I guess people consume information differently. And as well, I find having, this doesn't include your website, this is a BIM spectacularly dry to listen to.
Yeah.
We run Revit and we run Ecosim in our office, depending on what the client wants or, you know, what the developer wants. But I was like, okay, which one should I use? There must be a video. There must be something on YouTube going, this is why BIM's amazing.
Yeah.
And it was all like 15-minute long,
in-depth
things. And I was like, sell me an Apple video, like a 2-3-minute dream.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of that's what we're trying to do is, because actually when you're in BIM, you're actually doing it, it's not that radically different. It's not that much of a change, I think. And the acronym BIM has become a real, almost its own worst enemy, because people associate it with change and something new and something different. So.
Yeah.
What we're really trying to do is reconnect people with the vision. So not just, you know, it's structured data in a common data environment and it's 3D modeling, and because that is dull as dishwater, isn't it really? What excites me is the vision of the potential of where it could go. So what we're trying to do is really cut through a lot of the BIM wash, as it's called, and a lot of the hype, and just bring it back down to basics and say, look, this is what it can do for you, this is what it can do for your business, and this is how you can do it. Yeah, and it's resonating. It's going really well so far.
Did you when you put the first video on, How did you market that? You obviously were like, oh God, we're going to put a video on. You know, like put a Facebook video on. If I'm popular.
If you look back at my first one, I'm like a rabbit in the headlights. Like, oh. But well, as you know from the podcast, guys, I listened to your episode 11, hashtag I did.
Yes, you're the third person.
Third in the world. I'm ashamed I got a bronze medal. Unfortunately, I thought I'd done really well by
millions of listeners.
I was really interested. But yeah, we started small. So in the first video... it wasn't great, but we built momentum and we've gone from there. And the way YouTube works is it's done like a spike. So every time you put a new video out, it spikes really high. I'm making hand actions here on the radio, which you can't see. And then every time when you fall back from that spike, your daily view count never drops as low as it did before the spike. So you basically jump with spikes up the chart. You basically build an audience who are interested in what you're doing. And YouTube's all about... consistency. So we put out the same thing at the same time every week, as I was saying, so people know what to expect, they know what's coming, and they're tuning in for it every week, which is really good, as you well know with the podcast.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. It is consistency, and I think it's I've seen that in, because the reason why I'm so interested in BIM, I feel that a lot of technologies are all converging very quickly, and I feel that YouTube's just becoming like a television channel. BIM is, it to me, like real, you know, everyone's obsessed with their real-time monitoring in their house, in like the Google Nest.
We've become really impatient, like, and the way you watch stuff now is changing. So you're no longer expected to be on the sofa for 9 p.m. to watch The Apprentice or I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. You can watch it when you want, how you want, wherever you want. And the shift from scheduled televised programming to streaming is becoming huge. Things like there's YouTube Red, there's Netflix, there's Amazon Prime, Amazon Videos, all that sort of stuff coming through. So we're trying to be construction's portal in that in that arena.
Well, because it's, as you said, because it is such a it's a construction only video channel, right? But it's so approachable on your website that I do think that it is one of the very few that you can kind of, oh, okay, I get it. Like,
yeah, that
was a nice, relaxing video. It's not, you know, dullish dishwater guy just going through slides. And
I can be dull, though, can't I? I can have moments where it's like, God, what was he on about now?
He's still going. But I think the reason why I struggle with BIM is that every time I talk to someone about BIM, I get really excited and you disappear off into random avenues. There's no kind of set thing that you can like grab onto, which is why just the software side of things alone, it seems like a Betamax VHS kind of battle going on in the background. Show my age there, but
think about it, it's the digitization of the industry. So yes, software is a huge part of that, but actually culture and the very work is huge as well. So, you know, as soon as you start having these conversations, as I said earlier, it's a Trojan horse for change. So as soon as you start having the conversation, it's no wonder you go off down all these different avenues, because it is a huge area. Yeah. We're talking about a complete cultural change of our industry. So it's not just 3D modeling. It's not just buying a bit of software.
I think that's the amazing part. And also that's why people think it is a big change, because the reason I'm so interested is because I feel for the first time since leaving uni, I no longer am current with software and stuff. I feel that there's genuinely, I'm getting to a point where I was sat next to a girl called Tia, who's like brilliant at Revit, and she was being forced to use 2D, and then it was driving her mad, because she was like, well, she'd worked in another company and she was really, really good at Revit. And her kind of attitude was like, well, okay, yeah, that's what I can do it like this and I can do it quicker. And there we go. We've got all the output. I've done it. It's done.
There's plenty of other people in the other category. And I've seen it a lot from, looking at BIM implementation in big companies, when people are under pressure and they've got loads going on and they've got to get stuff done, it's very, very easy to go back to what you know and the way you've done things for the last 20 years to get stuff done.
Yeah.
Because you want to,
Panic stations at 8 o'clock in the evening. You're not going to read a tutorial. But that's the kind of thing. It's like, just when I think I'm getting my head around the software side, people watching your videos, it's like, no, there's... It's the software side's just a small chunk. It's the kind of life cycle of a program. Yeah. And it's like suddenly like, oh, just when I thought I was getting my head around the software side.
The software's just an enabler. You know, it's like email is an enabler for communication. Yeah. Not a very good communicator. Not very good use of... I've messed up.
Time to do it.
The irony. It's not a very good method of communication, I should point out, because I know Sue Butch is listening to this, pulling her hair out, going, we shouldn't be using email. Sorry, Sue.
You're not on point.
Other communication methods are available.
But I think... Because I want to go back to like why you started in your background as well, but I want... There's a lot of future forecasting in BIM, right? Yeah. So especially listen to that HS2 talk, which was like, it's a 20-year long project and they're fully investing in BIM. And I'm sure in 20 years time, what we're doing now will seem so hilariously basic. But I guess once the construction chain starts all feeding in, this idea of government run projects in 2016 all being BIM will be a major catalyst. I don't know if people will.
It helps with momentum because obviously the government spend a lot of money on capital projects and that flows down through contractors, through supply chains, through design supply chains as well. So that's a good pull, but there's a long way to go. And I said as I said earlier, that's where we get the real value out of it, when the whole industry comes and is part of it. So that's why I'm so keen on. And going back to why we use YouTube, that's why we use YouTube, because it struck me that we had these rooms full of like 30 or 40 people at an event, and 50% of them would be interested, and probably 10% would go away actually going to do something about it, and probably only 5% of those people would actually have any impact. So, we're trying to go around the industry and do events in the evening and things to get people to do BIM. And it struck me that, I don't want the 30 people in the room, I want the 30,000 people on the sofas watching YouTube. Going back to what you said about finding stuff on YouTube, there's a lot of there's some very, very big channels out there run by the software vendors. But a lot of that is Revit equals BIM or ArchiCAD equals BIM, or other software types equal BIM, and you're trying to get some impartiality, trying to find an impartial view. Okay, what actually is BIM and how do I do it without being sold a software platform down the channel is quite a hard thing to do. So we're the biggest kind of impartial YouTube channel for BIM, and that's really good. I think people will really like us for that, and that really resonates with people. I think that's why we're earning a bit of a following, which is good. But the idea is to go from, because obviously I'm very mindful that BIM is going to become irrelevant over time, it's going to become redundant, so we want to move from BIM to digital construction, and the ultimate goal is to be construction TV. So we want to be the go-to place where you can come home in the evening and you can learn something, you can be inspired by something, you can watch a really cool documentary from the other side of the world, and you can see the industry at its best. And I think showing that to the younger generation, the YouTube generation, is really powerful. It's really important to get those people into our industry. Because at the minute, the best people don't really come into our industry. No offense to all the people in our industry listening. but we need to, the best talent is normally directed into, law or business and finance and things like that. So I think inspiring the younger generation is really, really important.
Isn't it? Because it's just also from your email that you sent yesterday, you've obviously got a very clear idea of what you're trying to achieve with the kind of B1M. And I guess because you're sitting above the software side, you can look down on it and explain. You don't have to get involved in the little squabbles of software and things. Yeah. You can kind of keep, I don't know, it must be very interesting to sit on top of all that and kind of look down, and then it must seem more obvious to you.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a really good advantage that we have.
I think these have stopped working now, these headphones. That's bloody a connection. Anyway, so you're kind of, goal for the B1M, the future of
absolutely. So what you asked me, the software looking down, is this still, are we still going?
Why, my stupid connection here, let me just hang that there, you can hang yours there, and then we're good to go again. I'll have that fixed soon.
Is this coming out, this bit?
Yeah, this is all good. It's all good. I'll keep this in. It's fine. This is normal. I don't edit anything out.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So I just show people the headphones stop working, but it's fine now. So yeah, looking down on the software side of things.
Yes, absolutely. So it's good that we've got that impartiality. God, this is why I was nervous. This moment where you freeze and don't remember what you're actually saying.
This is podcast gold, though.
It is, yes.
This is what people are going to start listening again. They're like, oh.
Yes. making videos in construction and putting stuff out on YouTube, because we basically film our content and then put it out on YouTube, and that's generated a lot of interest. You know, we've got a really big social media, really engaged social media following. But the world and his wife want to make content with us, or want us to come along and film things, or you know, film showcases about their product and how great it is. And we could very easily be sidetracked into becoming a video production company in construction. Yeah. I mean, you know, we'd make money out of that, but there'd be a kind of a cap to it. That's all it would ever be, and it wouldn't really change things or add any value. Yeah. So we've made a really conscious decision not to go down that route, and to, as you say, stick with the clear forward vision that we've got, and to really, really, really follow through on it. I'm reading a book at the minute called Essentialism, Disciplined Pursuit of Less, which is a really good book. And it's all about, you know, if something doesn't directly contribute to your ultimate vision, why the bloody hell are you doing it?
Yeah.
And that's been a really good way of chopping stuff out and forgetting stuff and saying no. We've become quite good at saying no.
Yeah, I bet.
The way the industry works, there's a lot of... there's a lot of groups, there's a lot of reports, there's a lot of working teams, there's a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of crap. And on numerous occasions, we've been asked to get, you know, sidetracked into all those things. And that's not what I want to do at all. Yeah. I've got a big vision, a clear vision. And it's about reaching people through really awesome videos in every different corner of the world.
Well, the great thing is as well that the way that YouTube's set up, and essentially, you know, you could film your videos on an iPhone. I mean, you actually put a hell of a lot of effort in. But the point is that you can distribute information so quickly, so easily, with very little overheads. The bureaucracy, if you don't want to get involved, you don't have to. You know, I'm sure back in the good old days doing a podcast, it would be a radio station. You'd have to, you know, sit down and explain what you were going to do and edit it. Whereas I just think it's great that you want to go out there and do a video about BIM, and you've just gone and done it.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube make it very, very easy for anyone to upload stuff, because that's what they want to do. So you can, there's an app on your phone where you actually film something and upload it straight away to YouTube. And there's all sorts of degrees of quality with that. You know, we put a lot of effort into scripting and filming in 4K with the right cameras. So it's all in HD stuff. We subtitle everything.
You film in 4K?
Yeah, every time. Well, most of the time, anyway. You can see the ones that aren't, I think, anyway, to the HDI. But we put a lot of effort into the content, because YouTube, it's not about view count. It's about audience retention.
Mm.
So they rank stuff based on how engaged your audience are. So it's not about, you know, if a video's got 1 million views, but people have clicked off in the first 10, 15 seconds, that's not going to rank as highly as a video with 500,000 views that everyone's watched to the end of. So it's a really good algorithm, because it ranks the good stuff from the bad stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyone can upload anything.
But the analytics software must be amazing. And that's
The analytics is really, I could bore you for ages with the analytics, but that's what I spent my life looking at. But yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Do you, I remember I said at the beginning I wanted to do like 20 minutes about BIM and then I wanted to get in, because I'm obsessed with the background of how you did it as well. So I feel that if people want to find out more about BIM and the software and everything, they can go to b1m.com and they can find out all of that stuff. And I
the b1m.com.
Sorry,
spell it out for this.
And sorry, it's the b1m.com.
Shameless plug. Yeah, I think it's the b1m.com.
Okay, got it. And
shameless plug.
That's what it's all about. And then so that you can find out anything you want there, and they got all the information you need. But the next part I want to talk about is I really want to know, like, how you do it. Why? So what was it like filming the first video? Like, was it
painful?
Yeah. How many times did you redo the first video then?
Yeah, there's a lot of outtakes. There's a lot on our cutting room floor. We're doing a roundup bloopers video at the end of the year. So that should be interesting.
But like, cause you filmed them all kind of in and around places, aren't you? Some of the early ones, you're in and around London, aren't you?
Yeah, they're gradually getting more professional. We have something called the curse of the B1M video shoot, where literally the world and his wife will come out and make noise as we're filming a video outdoors.
So we've moved indoors now.
Literally, we've had blokes setting up ladders, we've had dogs barking, we had a street parade, we had a protest once, not about us, but just coming down the street. And I was just like, oh my God. What are we doing?
Trying to film here.
Yeah. God. The What is a BIM model one, actually, we filmed. It's actually in a park. It's on the Heathrow flight path. There we go. And literally, we had like 30-second windows to film these to film these takes, and it took bloody years. And they were, you know, obviously, when you had that 30-second window, there'd then be some idiot that comes along, oh, was this for TV, mate? Yeah, it's going to be on BBC.
No way. It's a YouTube channel, actually. Yeah.
So we've now isolated ourselves from the British public and we're indoors, which is quite nice.
Do you feel that stress and production have gone up since you've been indoors? Or, like, gone down, sorry, because you've got in a controlled environment, or...
Yeah, I don't know. You probably know from, like, the audio stuff, you hear a lot more indoors.
Yeah.
It's a lot more sensitive to sound and stuff. We're going more professional with it, but I don't want to lose the kind of, what's the word, like the rawness and the genuine feel.
Well, because there must have been a conscious decision on your part to film it in a park. Oh, we're going to do the first one outside.
Yeah.
It's not in a static, white, boring room. It's
a bit interesting for people. We had the sort of London skyline in the background. So it was sort of built environment. But yeah, it's just, I think a lot of people spend a lot of money making very, very well-produced, glossy videos that actually don't come across as that genuine.
100%, yeah.
So...
That's why I keep trying to explain to people at the podcast, when stuff goes wrong, that's fine. Because, no one's expecting an hour. Like, I think an hour long, like, scripted, well-talked through video, like, audio-only BIM chat would be just, or any chat would be very
good. So what you're saying is my huge fluff-up 10 minutes ago
was perfect. And my headphones breaking and all sorts of stuff's gone wrong. People have come into the meeting rooms as I've been like,
as a perfectionist, a part of me died when that happened.
To me, I was like, this is perfect.
Yeah, and we're still drawing attention to it. Great.
How to avoid a mistake. Just keep drawing attention to it.
But no, it's something that I started alongside my day job. So I literally started it sort of on the quiet, as you do, because I obviously had an employer and I didn't want to alienate them or upset them in any way. So obviously there was probably about 8-9 months worth of development in terms of setting up a company, website development costs, investment, building stuff, approving stuff, getting it all ready to go. And then we managed to get some press coverage around the launch. So literally the day before it launched, I decided to talk to my line manager. I just said, look, before you read about this on the train, we're doing this thing. It's not going to affect my job or anything. I'm doing it on the side. I can do it in the evenings and weekends. It's cool. This is before I had a baby.
Yeah, with all that wonderful spare time.
Yes, before spare time and expendable income all evaporated. And then it was like, wow, that's really cool. We need to talk to the BIM guy about this and the IT director. We need to talk to the CEO, obviously, and the comms team. And I was like,
awkward.
But they loved it. They really, really loved it because it kind of complemented what they were doing. And it complemented their business and their brand, and they were really impressed that somebody had gone out and tried to do something that supported it. And really, that's been the theme throughout. So as it's taken off, as it's been nominated for, you know, big awards, as it's won some really big awards,
nice.
They've been really, really supportive of it.
So are you still working at this practice, or are you full-time on the B1M now?
I'm full-time on B1M now. Nice. So it was all very well-timed, as it were. We'd been nominated for the Construction News Awards BIM Initiative of the Year, which was really good because we were up against the people that built the Shard and the UK Government BIM Task Group and a leading architects practice, and then us. And it was like,
no way.
And Skanska and BAM, I think. So I was like, and then the B1M's on this list, and it's like, we're there, which is great. We got to go to the awards and everything, and obviously we spectacularly lost. But we got Dara Breen saying the B1M out loud, which was cool.
Nice.
And then I was nominated for Achiever of the Year for Constructing Excellence. And I went to that literally. There was a huge, you know, lineup of people, really good people. And they read my name out and I won. And it was just probably one of the best moments of my life, to be honest. With my wife sat next to me and everything. It was just absolutely mental.
And also something that you've kind of built from the ground up as well. Yeah, that must be so satisfying.
And I think what was really good about that is there was a lot of... no offence, but a lot of grey-haired men and people in suits and that wear ties and a lot of the status quo were nominated. Yeah. And I think to recognise a young person and to really, you know, just recognise what we're doing has been really good. And it's not something for the mantelpiece. It's something that we've really channeled into the momentum and to help us build our vision, which is good. So
I also think that by showing and investing in the kind of, as you keep saying, the kind of the next generation of people coming up, I think by recognising that, you know, people, the way people work, the way people are doing stuff is all totally changing. I think that's part of the exciting part about BIM is that it's kind of, I don't really know what it'll be like in 5-10 years time.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine it'll be, well, do you think about that? What's your co-founder called?
Tom Payne.
Tom. Do you and Tom sit down and go, do you have a strategy? There is a strategy.
Probably won't fill all of it in a podcast.
What's your...
Because it's malicious and I'm lying and, you know. But no, it's just, you know, there are strategies in place. It's largely around building the channel. So we build our audience, build an engaged audience. We continually build the quality of the content. And we scale up the monetization we've got so far. We scale up the monetization. That's, you know, there's no secrets there. That's what it is. I suppose the ins and outs of how we do that are a bit more guarded. But it's there. So yeah, I had those things on my belt. We had the first newspaper published, which got a really good global reaction.
What's the newspaper?
The B1M Mail.
We publish
a hard copy newspaper about the digital age, which is to engage the analog generation. So the people that aren't on Twitter, aren't on Facebook, aren't on LinkedIn, aren't on YouTube, that don't care about BIM, we're hitting them with a, not hitting them, but we're hitting their doormats with
this is part of your malicious 5-year plan.
This is why I want to edit the podcast. So we're hitting their front doormats with printed information about BIM that directs them into digital resources. And that's been really, really useful. Every time we do that, we see a big spike in our audience because we're pulling the analog generation in. That's a real example of, you know, a lot of people, or not a lot of people, but a few people with a paper have been like, oh, why would you go print? It's digital. I'm digital or bust. And you just think, oh, God, you know, we're trying to reach the analog generation here. We're trying to get 2 million people that aren't working in a digital way to work in a digital way. So we can't cross our arms and go, oh, we've gone digital ages ago. Shame on you. We need to reach out to them. We need to put our arm around them. We need to bring them in. So, yeah, the paper's been a really good way of doing that. So, yeah, I had those three things, the awards, the paper. There's a lot of momentum. And I literally went to the chairman of our company and I said, look, I've got a lot of momentum around this. I think it could really grow into something. I want to spend a bit more time doing it. Would I be able to spend a bit more time of my working week doing it? You know, at probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. I had written out a little speech about the things I was going to say. And I went in and sat, and he literally cut me off halfway through and said, oh, we spoke about that 2 weeks ago at the board meeting because we thought, you know, this is a really cool thing. We need to back it a bit more. So we were going to talk to you about it anyway.
I was like, no way.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, and it's growing from there. So I'm now full-time on it. My employer are a shareholder in our business. Tom's employer are a shareholder in the business as well. Tom's now part-time, so he's part-time in B1M, part-time in his employer. So yeah, his company's a shareholder. My employer's a shareholder. I'm still involved with them. I'm still on like a operational board level with them. And yeah, it's good. So we've got a BIM channel. We've got Tom's expertise from the YouTube side, YouTube channel development stuff. We've got my expertise from the BIM construction side. We've got the access to open doors within YouTube, within Google, within the digital media sphere. And we've got the access to open doors within construction, which
sounds like you've
really
got
a pretty
good hold on things at the moment then.
Yeah, my wife was saying, this is all I think about. It's all I do every hour of every day for the last 5 years. And I think going full time, it's completely consumed me.
Yeah.
I think it's been really good because I had a baby at the start of the year as well. My wife and I had a baby in March called Ben, actually.
Oh, fantastic name.
Good name. So that's, and people think, you know, oh my God, so you're doing, the year we've had on B1M 2015 has really gone up a notch, and I've had a small baby.
Yeah.
But that's been really good because it's forced work-life balance. You know, I get home at the end of the day and there's a little guy there waiting for his bath, and he only likes me to do his bath. Anyone else does his bath, he gets a bit upset.
That's awesome.
So to have him smiling at me and everything, like at that point, it's not about all the tweets coming into my phone or the trolls saying something nasty or what content we're making or is the video ready for next week. It's about family, and that's been, yeah, it's been really, really good. Well,
you're not the first, because I'm expecting a child in February, so this is why when you told me that, I was like, oh, okay,
that's why you don't get tired.
Yeah, I've still got the energy in me. But it was like one of my friends said that it's kind of focused him more at work having a kid.
Yeah,
and I thought I can totally understand that. He was like, it's weird, like my work's got harder, but I feel less pressure at work because baby just takes up so much of your thought. You come in and it's like, okay, right, I'm at work.
Yeah, because I had a bit of overlap. So I only went full-time in B1M from the start of July. So I had 3 or 4 months where I had, I had Ben. And then I was doing 3 days in the day job and 2 days in the B1M. Obviously, 3 days in the day job was actually 6 days condensed into three because I expected to do the same. But yeah, before Ben came along, I would be in the office early and I'd be there late. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't matter what time I got home. Yeah, my wife and I could go out and just leave the house very easily and very quickly, and it will be straightforward, and all this paraphernalia that comes with us. But yeah, no, you're right. When he's come along, you've got something to get home for.
Yeah.
And no offence to my wife. Are you sure we can't edit this?
Is she still listening now? That'd
yes,
be amazing.
Yes, she's probably like... just filing the divorce papers as we speak. Reason for divorce. My husband actually married the B1M. you've got something to something extra special to get.
No, I totally agree. I think we got one of the things that I found that if you just work, obviously we are partitioning our wives in this whole conversation. This is you kind of get so caught up with it, and I think one of the things that I really like is that the B1M feels very much you. It's like it's your own creativity. It's what you want to do, and if you've come up with an idea, you just go and do it.
Yeah.
And to me, this is why I like the podcast. It's not monetized course, yeah. or anything, but it's kind of there's nothing stopping you from just trying an idea. Like
that's part of what drove me to it, because I was involved with a group of young people who were trying to make a change in construction, but it was associated to one of the sort of institutions. And we would sort of have these cool ideas. We'd be young people talking around, and we'd try and go and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And the bureaucracy would kick in, or the institution we were attached to would become a real barrier.
Yeah.
Or they'd want to monetize it in some way, or we'd have to sign it off by someone.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt really, really limited. So I literally chopped that in at the same time as I was thinking of starting the B1M. It was all that preparation we were doing. Yeah, and that's what I love about what we do.
Yeah.
And that's why we're not a video production company, because when you do that, when you charge for video production, you suddenly lose editorial control, and you're obliged to put their logo a little bit bigger and a little bit longer,
yeah.
and make a bit more of their products. And I just don't want to do that. I love the fact that Tom and I can sit down and go, right, what content should we do? What should we do? How daring should we go? What should we make this week? What should we leave in that edit? What should we take out of that edit?
Yeah.
And yeah, just the freedom to do that is awesome. I think that's really important. You know, this is becoming really, really influential. A lot of people are watching it. A lot of young people are watching it. And yeah, to sell out and force sell something would be really wrong, I think.
I do think that as well, the way the industry seems to be changing, if you look at how celebrities and marketing departments use Instagram and things, you know, they become portals for information, right? And the bigger that portal becomes, the more power they have, to the point where a marketing division is just paying people through different mediums. And I would imagine that as inevitably the B1M just continues to grow, people, it must be the temptation to sell out, or just slowly erode those values that were so like commanding.
The thing is, we've got a really big vision, and it's going to take money to achieve that vision. So we need to monetize. Mm. So, I'd love to do this for free forever, but it's just not sustainable. And there's a lot of people that upsets, like, oh, you're selling out.
Yeah.
Well, we've either got to monetize or we're not going to exist anymore.
Yeah. I do need money.
Yeah.
Ben's not cheap.
Yeah. So the business model we've got is one of building an audience that trust what you're saying. So if you look at other sectors like health and fitness, health and fitness or beauty, there's a real proven business model on YouTube there, where you build an engaged audience around an individual or a couple of individuals that people trust, and then you very subtly and appropriately put brand product placement within there. So there's a very famous girl called Zoella in the health and fitness.
In the
beauty arena.
Yeah.
And she's built she just did videos in her bedroom reviewing different types of makeup. And she built a really huge following. And she's at the point now where L'Oreal pay her something like £90,000 a video to review their makeup, because it's more powerful to reach their audience through one of their friends that they trust and have them review a product than put it on, you know, bus stops or billboards or TV adverts.
It's amazing. That shift, to me, seems to have happened quite quickly. Yeah. Like, let's say 5 years max, but it doesn't even feel like that to me.
Think about it, if you're going to buy a TV or something, and you're not sure about it, if your friend recommends it to you, you're much more likely to do it.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build Tom and I and the other individuals that take part in our channel and the B1M essentially is the brand, is the friend of those people. Yeah. So they know they can go to it, they can trust it, they know they're going to get the same thing every time. And that's becoming really powerful for brands. But I mean, YouTube are really strict around how product placement is done, and I'm really strict around how it's done as well. We did a video on 5D BIM. There's a Fika Office software in there, and all we've done there is show you how how 5D BIM takes place on a piece of software. It just happens that the only piece of software we used was their software. So that's as far as the product placement goes.
And that's fine, is it? That type of product, yeah.
That's as long as you declare it, that sort of thing is fine, yeah. We do video powering as well, so like brand placement in the indents either end. But there's a set number of seconds they can be in for and how long they can be in the video for. And again, you have to declare that on YouTube. So,
oh, you actually have to declare it when you register the video?
Yeah, there's a lot of controls around it. So we can't just do a sales pitch.
Yeah. Well, that's something I didn't even know you could or couldn't do that. I mean, I guess... It dawned on me that if you have a million people looking at a stupid cat video, but they continually look at that, the advertising things on either side of that stupid cat video that if you can control who clicks on that, it must be ridiculous.
I think people are getting used to it. I think you look at most Facebook feeds now, just full of stuff like that, like, you know, cat videos and all the rest of it. And it's clickbaiting people to go to websites. I think Mashable will get something like 40 million unique hits a month. It's insane, but most of the Mashable stuff is you know, you see the link or you see the story, you click on it, and the story probably isn't that good.
Yeah.
Apologies, Pete Cashmore, if you're listening. But they've got what they wanted. They've got you on the website.
Yeah.
There's a lot of clickbaiting going on and trying to.
I probably do. I think anyone does it in their statuses without even realizing. But things that really annoy me, it's like 31 photos that will blow your mind. Yeah. Number 17 was incredible, and you're like.
And you have to go through it. And every other one's an advert or something. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the world are getting more resistant to that. I mean, that's played into our hands a little bit, because the product placement within footage or within content that audiences are really engaged in has become really powerful.
Yeah.
So like Heineken don't spend loads of money advertising around the James Bond film. They spend a lot more money getting the Heineken bottle into Daniel Craig's hand. Because when the viewer is immersed in watching something and really engaged in watching something, that's the best time to subtly and subliminally, as it were, which I know is illegal, but subliminally kind of promote your brand.
And I just find the whole process interesting, that people are like up in arms that films have like Converse shoes in. Then you're like,
sometimes
just,
it goes too far.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
But then surely like film, just...
Sometimes
just,
it goes too far.
Just don't buy the Converse shoes then.
Yeah,
just,
exactly.
Just don't buy the stuff. No, I'm too weak-minded. I do think I am like that though. Like I think especially because I have a very busy tube route in, and I hit the same advertising billboards every single day.
You tune out, don't you? That's the thing. The world's become so noisy, and all the Mashable stuff and the clickbaiting so noisy now that people tune out to it, and we're becoming immune to it. And that's, as I say, that's why the content that people trust and is immersed in is a real market for that.
However, the thing that does annoy me is that I do know that there is a perfect sequence of design, advertising, and logos that will grab me, and I know they will, which is why I'm a little bit like, don't see a new telly, don't see a new telly. That was only £500, I tell you. Yeah. And then for like months, I won't think about it. And I'm terrible for it. But do you guys, so going back to your YouTube channel, can you control what advertising is on either side of the kind of ticket, I don't know what it's called, but like the sidebars or whatever?
Yeah, we can control where it is. So we can control whether you get those skippable ads at the start of the video, which are really annoying.
Yeah.
The pop-up ads or the ads on the side. If you're on desktop, the ads on the side of the video screen. You don't get as many ads on mobile, which is good. So a lot of our people watch on mobile, which is quite powerful. We get YouTube ad revenue from our videos, but it is literally not a lot. I think over about 9 months, it's not a lot of money at all. Yeah. So that's not a breadwinner for us. But we can't control what's advertised against. It's done on the metadata and the way you tag the video, the way the video's titled and who's watched it. Obviously, we can, on our website, we do online advertising on there, and we can control where adverts appear. But yeah, no, YouTube is, it's like it's Google AdSense inventory. So yeah.
So do you, because you do other stuff around B1M. So I saw B1M universities and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's that?
That's our, basically like a massive open online course, or a MOOC, which is what it's called.
A massive online course.
Massive open online course. It's like a video series where we're filming speakers at universities, and then we share that freely on the channel. So that's, you know, the purpose of doing that is to film a video that people can watch around the world. And we happen to make the actual event of filming it a bit of an event as well, as people can come along and watch. But it's not just something that you go to and there's no filming. I think that's crazy. Not sharing information from events is criminal.
Yeah, you're right though. It does seem that, again, that's changing. I was talking to Sue Butcher about live tweeting. And I, a little part of me, because the first time I saw it, I was like, get off your bloody laptop. And then, and it does seem ridiculous now. And like,
there are some people though, I see that I'm totally on board with all the stuff Sue does, but there's some people I see them tweeting all the time. And I'm like, how are you doing your job? But, like, what? Like, when do you eat? When do you sleep? When do you see your family?
Yeah, exactly.
When do you earn your living? Yeah.
I do wonder though, that's why I was asking Sue about, like, is there a way to like store a big funnel of tweets and then you just like let them drip out, you know, you have a rat rush of like half an hour, 50 tweets, and then let them drip feed across the day or whatever. But I think that you're right. What, doing a lecture to 30 people with free YouTubing and things seems so old school now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's not always appropriate to do it. So yeah, I'm not saying every presentation in the world should be filmed, but yeah, it's not always appropriate to do it. And there's a lot of effort that goes into taking something that, yeah, presentation in a room is very different to watching a video on YouTube.
Yeah.
So we're doing a lot more stuff around, actually, this isn't a presentation in a room, it's, we're filming a video and there happen to be some people there. Because people go on a bit, it's not very engaging, it can be a bit dry. So, you know, the HS2 one, we filmed from like four different camera angles, there were lots of cutaways, there were some video cutaways, there were slides in there. And you can, we kind of got away on length with HS2 because HS2 is 15 minutes, so it's a pretty long video.
I listened to the whole thing. YouTube.
It's pretty long for YouTube. But I think, you know, part of the fact that, you know, all those camera angles and stuff and cutaways, and partly because it's a bit of an interesting subject area, you can kind of get away with it.
Yeah. Do you find, how much have you shifted the way that you do videos and stuff depending on how long people watch them? Because at the beginning were you like, oh, let's do a 25-minute one, and then you realise no one's watching past the first 7 minutes 20 or something like
that. Yeah, you look back to the back catalogue and stuff, we definitely found our feet a bit. There's some stuff at the early days that we did because we could do it, and that's when I was, you know, still working full-time and we were struggling to get footage out there consistently and in high enough quality, so it was a bit sort of patchy, and you can see we jumped around a bit in terms of format. I think now we're honing that down a bit more, and much more strict about what goes on our channel, so we're not afraid now if someone does a presentation or we filmed it, or, you know, we've created a video with them and it's not good enough, we don't release it. There's a few things we filmed that just weren't good enough that we haven't released.
And do the people go, my presentation doesn't seem to be on your
website? Yeah, it can make for a hard conversation. And sometimes we make very long presentations, a lot shorter than they were. You know, HS2 was about half an hour. You've got 15 minutes online, mostly because part of it was quite controversial. So yeah, it's just being strict. You know, we're looking at franchising at the minute into different countries. So we're looking at India, South Africa, Australia, Iceland of all places, franchising our content out. But the content curation is going to be done internationally, but the kind of gatekeepers of the channel are still going to be me and Tom. So
it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's how we want to scale the business. You know, we want to be at the point where hopefully one day other people can create really good content with us or for us, on a, you know, in line with our schedule and our plans and our mission and what people need, but that we can actually approve it and be the gateway. So if it's not good enough, if we're not happy, it ain't going out there.
Because what's cool as well is that, you know, when you go on the website, you've got two quite contrasting faces in you and Tom. And, like, Tom's got his massive beard.
Because
I was watching some of the videos at work, and
we started growing our beards at the same time. It's just I haven't got as much testosterone, so I haven't quite caught up.
I also suffer from a similar affliction.
Yeah, I can bench more than him though. So, boom, there
he's
you go.
Like, damn it, I can't bench anything.
Yeah,
but my
he's got a good beard. Yeah.
It is a great beard.
Between us, we're quite powerful. Like Power Rangers, where they always used to get together at the end and be stronger in the hole.
Like some odd Captain Planet style thing. Yeah. But like, so did you? Were you always going to start
Sorry,
together?
Tom, by the way, yeah, you'll get there one day with benching. Yeah.
But you'll never get there with a beard. Yeah, you
start small with those little weights you're on. He's going mad at the minute. I know, this is in his headphones. Hi, Tom. He's getting really annoyed.
So I mean, you always started off together then. It was always like, you were like, there's something I can't do that you can, and vice versa, and will.
This is a world exclusive, but I actually ages ago, when I was like early 20s, I always wanted to do something. I want to start my own business, which was a fundamental thing. So my dad's got his own business, and I didn't like the fact that somebody else can tell you how much money you can earn and what you can do and what you will be in your life and when you'll be promoted. You know, I just like the independence of it and the fact that it's not capped. So I've always had that kind of in me. Early 20s, I I thought about a social network in construction, which at the time was probably doable. Mm. It wasn't, because I think now the social networks have pulled so far ahead that you're never going to catch them. So people are doing like a social network in construction called Fred Blogs. So lots of different people could set up their own blog. And the whole platform was going to be called Fred Blogs. So there you go. Didn't materialise, mostly because of funding, and probably because it was a bit of a crap idea.
The idea was there.
Yeah. There's like a 150 page business plan, which I've still got. All branding and everything, strategy all put together. But yeah, it just never really came to light, mostly because of funding. Probably a good thing, because I think in hindsight, there's been a few people try to start a construction social network, and it's just been a bit... they've just struggled because they're trying to get people onto a new platform, and actually everyone's already on LinkedIn or Facebook or Twitter. So I've always wanted to do something, and I spoke about that with Tom in a Starbucks. Other coffee shops are available.
not placement.
In a Starbucks is now shut down. That's a bad omen or not, but they've just kind of made it like a shrine. This is where B1M was born. we had to chat about that for a while, and then the B1M idea came up over a coffee. And yeah, it went from there.
So I guess, because we're coming up right into the 50-minute mark, so I'll wrap this up now. But what's without giving too much away of your sinister 10-year business plan, what is next? Like, what are you kind of targeting, and what are you... Because the YouTube channel is going great, but I guess, do you see it very much as like we're only like step one of a much bigger chain of things?
Yeah, I want to get more videos out in a week. At the moment, we're doing one a week because we want to have... quality rather than quantity.
Yeah.
And also it's quite a lot to ask people to watch more in a week. We're asking for 5 minutes or 10 minutes of people's time a week at the minute, which is quite a lot.
Do you get people asking for, can you do more than this?
That can be a real pain. Can you do a video on this? No. we appreciate the advice and the guidance and stuff, but sometimes it's just not appropriate. We're trying to gradually build up the amount of content we put up. We want to raise the quality of it. We want to go a bit more international with it, because there's a real danger that we get drawn into the United Kingdom cul-de-sac, as I call it, and we end up with stuff that's all very UK-centric. So we're trying to do a lot more international stuff. We've got a few international documentaries coming up, which will be cool.
Wow. Where's the big kind of... mind blank. Where's the big areas around the world that use BIM? Like, I guess America must be massive, and is China America, huge as well? Or?
America did a lot of 3D modelling. BDC as they call it, but I wouldn't really call it BIM. They kind of got a bit of a way to go on BIM. Hello,
oh, really?
By the way, to the whole of North America, I've just ascended. they got a bit of a way to go on BIM. I don't know about BIM, but for us as B1M, India is huge. India's got 1 billion people in it, and it's the biggest YouTube market. Because obviously China are bigger than India, but they're not a huge fan of YouTube.
Yeah.
India's a really, really big market for us. That's the reason one of our trial franchises we're looking to do over there. We've got a really good Facebook following in India, so that's really good. It's about more content and working towards that vision, as I said. So we want to gradually take our audience with us and go from BIM to digital construction, and then construction TV is the goal.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean by construction TV?
As I said earlier, I just want to be the go-to place for construction. So you can go and learn about stuff, you can find out about stuff, you can watch really, really cool documentaries that actually teach you something at the same time. I think the natural world documentaries that Attenborough does and things, they're really beautifully shot, they're compelling to watch, they're engaging, but you also learn something at the same time. And you see different parts of the world you've never seen before. And you sort of see the planet at its best. And that's what I want to do with construction. I want to show different parts of the industry around the world and the great stuff that we do, and really, really engage and inspire people. That's where we want to be.
I guess the kind of the great mission statement to have there. But it's nice to have that constantly ringing in the back of your head, right? So it's a driving goal, and the little things that kind of distract you day to day, you can easily palm off because that's not part of that strategy.
Yeah,
we want
to do something that helps people, and we could easily get dragged into the monetization stuff. As I said earlier, we could sell out, we could become a video production company, we could do something like that. But at the end of the day, I've got a vision and I want to help people. And I think if you create something that helps people, that benefits people, the monetization after that is a really simple thing. So
that's amazing. Going back to India, why do you think they've adopted BIM so quickly? Is that because they're quite a young...
It's not they've adopted BIM. I think they did just a really big they're a really big outlet for us in terms of the YouTube viewership, which is good. And also BIM is becoming a hot topic there. They are, most other nations are behind the UK, but are able to adopt BIM quicker because they're learning from the UK's process. Mm. So we've been through a 4 or 5 year journey now, but there's been a lot of learning that's come out of that, and now we're really consolidated around some processes and some ideas and how it should be done, and we're really sharing our knowledge a lot more effectively than we used to. And a lot of other countries are now able to benefit from that. They haven't got to go through the 5 year learning curve. They can benefit from the head start we've given them, which is really good. So and it's happening all over the place. It's happening in China, South Korea, Australia, South Africa, USA, as I said, Finland, Spain. Spain's really behind it. We launched our first foreign language Twitter account yesterday.
I was going to say, I saw on your Twitter, I was like, I don't understand any of this. What is this foreign talk on my Twitter page?
Sorry.
But I was like, they're a franchise. Is that how that works?
So we're looking to become a more formal franchise in Spain. But at the moment, we've got a very lovely volunteer lady who is called Ira, who is subtitling our videos for us. And we're putting subtitles on our YouTube videos in Spanish. And that's had a phenomenal reaction. We started yesterday with a fresh Twitter account. We've got 50 followers in a day, which I'm really, really pleased about. Loads of sharing, something like 40 or 50 retweets. Just crazy, really, really crazy stuff. To go from a standing start in a country and have that kind of impact was a bit mental, really.
I think the nice thing about having all this online content and that real time feedback of people engaging. One of the hardest things I personally struggle with, it's not that I have a short attention span. You just want to know things are going well on a day to day basis, not a year by year basis. I find that kind of much more glacial pace of work. Yeah, you don't know if you're doing right or wrong, but to have that kind of immediate engagement is amazing.
I have to stay quite grounded with it because when we have a really good video, I get continuous positive feedback into my mobile phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, saying how great you are. And it's lovely, but at the same time, you have to be like, okay, right, calm down. And I probably get one message a month on average that's a bit snotty. Probably one a year that's really
from your wife.
Yeah, can you come home now, darling?
Good argument tactic. You're being an idiot. Well, she hasn't my Twitter followers say otherwise. Actually,
yeah, no, she hasn't trolled me just yet. But there's probably one a year that's a really malicious post that someone's written that's just completely misses the point or is a bit nasty. I think what we're doing is creating a bit of friction now, so. People don't like that we're putting it in a very simple and easy way. People don't like that it's free. People don't like that we are small. People don't like that we're young. People don't like that we're challenging the status quo.
I didn't think that people would be annoyed that you're doing it for free.
Oh, they are. Some people are. I mean, it's not the vast majority. As I say, you can see from our social media, we've got a really good engaged audience, and it's great. But it gets some people's backs up, and there's all sorts of things going on that just pathetic tactics. But
you must be a little bit like, all right, we're definitely doing well now. Look how many people we'd like.
Me. Delighted because I was trolled for the first time. I was like, yes, it's working. I've become a celebrity. I was spotted at Waterloo train station as well, which didn't help the ego. This random man just came up to me and said, are you Fred Mills? I was like, am I being mugged? I'll see your videos on YouTube. Keep up the good work. It's really good stuff. And he walked off. I was like, whoa.
Suddenly got a strut in your walk back
to
the gym.
Celebrity Big Brother 2016. I think looking at the lineup for this year, I am definitely a contender.
Yes. And we have.
I think we should go in together. We should be like like Ant and Dec.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, minor YouTube star, Fred Mills. And podcast genius, Ben Stewart.
Beyond minor podcaster. But I do think that, I will wrap this up now because feel like I talk for ages.
I'm just getting warmed up really. I could do this for hours.
Yeah. Honestly, me too.
With editing, please.
We edit 4 hour conversations in 10 minutes. And but this idea of when I was doing the podcast, Scroobius Pip tweeted to 100,000 people, and I think 50 or 60 people downloaded. When Sue Butcher tweeted, I had this almost the same amount of people, and she still has a lot of people. But as in her, I guess the people she has on engage a lot more because of the way she does. And I'd imagine you were just saying, your followers on B1M, they're on it. They're following you for a very specific reason as opposed to just like, oh, I know that person, I'll follow him.
You've got a lot of people saying, oh, can we get a retweet to your network, please? No, because it's going to piss them off. You know, we don't do that. We're very careful what we share with our network, and we do it in an appropriate way. So, yeah, and that's all about building trust with, as you know, building trust with the audience and stuff. Mm. But it's good. You know, we've got the social network numbers we've got are becoming big numbers now, which is good. So we've got a reach of like 1.2, 1.3 million a month.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, really good. But it's what we rely on is people sharing stuff from there. So it's not just putting it out there, it's it then being referred and passed on and other people seeing it from there, which really, really matters. And that's what's so powerful. It's friends recommending to their other friends to come and watch our stuff. And that's really where we benefit from. And that's why it's been so good to have like a start from nothing and build a real grassroots following.
Yeah.
If you just buy stuff or you go big too early, you just go for like billboards and, you know, print advertising and all that sort of stuff, you're not going to engage people. We've got a real trusted network, which is really good.
Yeah, I do think that it's exciting to see you passionate and to hear someone passionate about BIM in a way that I won't name any names, but there's people that can suck the energy out of something interesting. And
important people as well, like influential people.
And I was like, you had me at the beginning of the presentation, now you've lost me.
Yeah.
And it's like, why can't it be fun and interesting? I honestly just cannot get my head around it. It's almost like you're brilliant, you're very techie, but maybe just get someone else to do the talking.
Yeah. But there are some big like industry-leading events, and it just winds me up because it's like, oh, this is how we're going to inspire the future of construction. By the way, it's 250 quid or 300 quid or 400 quid to walk in, and the only people talking have got grey hair, they're white men in suits.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
very happy with themselves.
Where's the diversity? Where are the women? Where are the young people? How are we reaching young people? How are we actually going to change the industry? Because if you do a £250 event that people have got to come to, you're not going to reach young people with it, are you? You've got to go on to, obviously I'm terribly biased, but you've got to go on to things like YouTube and social media.
It's the crazy. B1M, isn't it?
The B1M.com, yeah. It just feels crazy to me that people still think that's the way to reach people and generate change. It's just madness.
Times are changing.
Yeah.
And on that note,
quite controversial,
I think I'll say thank you. And that was amazing. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. I got warmed up from my catastrophic fail at the beginning.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Fred.
Cheers, Ben.
Well, there you go. That was episode number 13 of the Create More podcast with Fred Mills from the B1M. Coming off, I've just been re-listening to it again. He was really on it with his questions, his answers. And it was really interesting talking to someone. The last person I spoke to who's kind of that kind of aware of social media and the importance of kind of the online landscape was Sue Butcher. And it I would say that, I can speak from my experiences. My experiences of our company, you know, Make, is that, you know, we are very passionate and very ingrained in online media, but we, you know, we're not trying to make it like, whereas Fred and Sue, you know, that their whole brand and their job is kind of promoting this and selling it through kind of online social media, which I think is really, really interesting, because it does feel a lot, you know, that is just the way that things are going, and it feels exciting, it feels new, it's you know, it's in a kind of not a new direction, it's been around for years, but for me to be aware of it, it's kind of cool just to find out, to see that level of detail, you know, the way he was talking about, you know, how can you get younger people in, how can you get, you know, more women, more everything, more this, you know, to have that sort of like targeted social media, you know, like the way I use Twitter is so bad, the way I use Instagram and stuff is, I don't know, it's just... It was great to hear, you know, get a real insight on how social media can be used, because I think most people have it because they feel like they should have it, whereas some people just don't need it. And, you know, I don't think social media is that important for some people. Ironically, it's becoming kind of cool if people don't have any online presence. I think there's a kind of counterculture going on. You know, people like Scroobius Pip, who need to promote record sales and their own record label and stuff, you know, it makes total sense. But you know, if you're an artist or like a sculptor or, you know, high-end architecture company who, you know, is kind of generally pitching for the, you know, the wealthiest 1%, really, you're going to make a lot more by just knowing the right people, you know, being in the industry, being experienced, being around for ages, than, you know, having this, you know, online Twitter presence. But I do think it's important for practices like making stuff to kind of be current and be informed and, you know, if you want to get like the latest, younger stuff, you've got to be down with the kids. But no, I really, really enjoyed that. And I hope you enjoyed that too. And next Fortnite's podcast is a really good one as well. I think this one with Fred has been really eye-opening in like social media and BIM, and you know, it's kind of just being at the forefront of something is so exciting. And the next one is with Aurelian Simon, who is one of the creative directors at Unit 9 for their virtual reality department. So, you know, just like BIM, he's using modern technology in a totally unique way. But man, it's cool. There's jobs that are, there's dream jobs, and I think his is definitely up there with one of them. So that's coming out, this is coming out Wednesday, the Tuesday, I'm promoting it Tuesday the 19th of January at midnight, and then so 2 weeks after that there'll be the Aurelian Simon one. So thanks for tuning in, and if you want to subscribe, that'd be amazing. If you want to give me a review, or you know, talk to me on Twitter at createmorepcast, that'd be great. Thank you so much.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.